Good day, and welcome to the Cigna Drug and Alcohol Awareness Series conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Amy Papageorge. Please go ahead.
Hello, and thank you for joining us for Cigna's Drug and Alcohol Awareness Series. My name is Amy Papageorge, and I'm a therapist and care manager for the Outpatient Substance Abuse Team at Cigna. Due to the format of this seminar, you will not be able to ask questions during the talk, but there will be an opportunity to ask questions at the end. Following today's presentation, you will be asked to participate in a brief 5-question survey so that we can get your feedback regarding your experience in today's seminar. After the survey, you will be able to ask our speaker questions regarding her talk. Please limit your questions to the seminar topic. If you have specific questions regarding substance abuse treatment or your policy, please contact the outpatient team by calling the number on the back of your insurance card. There's a PowerPoint for today's seminar available online. To access the PowerPoint, go to www.cigna.com/substanceabuse and click on today's presentation. Again, that's www.cigna.com/substanceabuse and then click on today's presentation. Today I have the pleasure of introducing Barbara Bradford. Barbara is a licensed independent clinical social worker and a care manager for Cigna's outpatient substance abuse program. She has over 30 years' experience working with people dealing with addictions and mental health problems in a wide variety of settings. Barbara?
Thanks, Amy. I appreciate you inviting me to do this presentation. Before we get started, though, I want to take a moment to let you know that I usually don't sound so much like Betty Davis. I was given a nice little cold and sore throat a couple days ago, and I'm doing my best to speak clearly. So with that in mind, let's move forward. Next slide. What I'd like to do is give an overview, and I'm going to be talking about how support groups can assist people with addictive disorders in maintaining their sobriety. I'm going to start by talking about what we know, and in researching this presentation, I found some pretty interesting statistics that I will discuss with you to provide an idea of the size of the problem, as well as the impact of not dealing with addictive disorders. I then want to talk a little bit about the history of support groups. Of course, many people think that prior to Alcoholics Anonymous, there wasn't anything. But I did find some interesting ideas about what was happening before then. I'm then going to talk about the significant role that support groups can play for people in maintaining their sobriety. And we'll finish with providing a brief description as well as contact information for a wide variety of groups available. And again, like Amy said, if you've got questions, please hold them until the end of the presentation. Next slide. So what do we know about alcohol? What do we know about addictive disorders? Well, more than one half of American adults have a close family member who has or has had an alcohol use disorder. And the federal government estimates that approximately, 8.9% of full-time workers have drinking problems. Now, there's a major monetary impact with that as well. Alcohol costs American businesses an estimated $134 billion in productivity losses, mostly due to missed work. And according to SAMHSA, in 2011, 133.4 million people used alcohol, and some 22.5 million used illicit drugs. Now, one of the interesting things that I found out that apparently about 10% of the children in the U.S. live with a parent that has some sort of addictive disorder. Next slide. Other things that we know about alcohol and substance use is that some 22% of men and 14% of women have some sort of substance-related addictive disorder. This was from a big survey that was done by the National Survey on Drug Use and Health in 2011. Another report, according to the National Center for Health Statistics, there were some 38,000 overdose deaths in the U.S. in 2010. close to 58% of those involved pharmaceuticals, and about 74% of those were considered unintentional. Another thing is with the pharmaceutical overdose deaths, most of them involved opioids. And another frightening statistic that I found was that drug overdose deaths have continued to rise over the last 11 years. So clearly there is a lot that needs to be done to address this. It's the third leading cause of a preventable death, excuse me. Now, one of the other things that I did was looking at an idea of what's the financial impact of being an addict to the person. Let's say you have a person who drinks maybe two packs a day, drinks 2 six-packs of beer a day, excuse me, and if you extrapolate that out, they spend close to $450 a year on that. If you add in the cost of cocktails these days, that could easily reach $2,000 a year that gets spent just on having the substance. Person addicted to nicotine. If you look at somebody who smokes only one pack a day, which is 20 cigarettes, they'll spend roughly about $2,400 a year on keeping that up. Now, I did do some research. Most people on average smoke at least a pack, some a little more. Apparently, people in New Hampshire and North Dakota have the highest number of cigarettes that they smoke per day. I'm not sure what that means, but anyway, they seem to smoke anywhere from 25 to 28 cigarettes a day. Now, the difficulty comes in trying to look at how much it costs to purchase illegal drugs. One thing that I saw talked about that people that use marijuana can spend, at least $1,000 per year or more. Those that are addicted to cocaine or heroin can easily spend up to $10,000 a year. And then if you turn your attention to a gambling addiction, that can easily ruin a person as well as have a huge impact on their family members. Now, according to the National Survey on Drug Use and Health from 2012, 23.1 million people ages 12 or older appeared that they would meet the criteria to attend treatment, that they use some sort of illicit drug or alcohol in the last year. But out of that number, only 2.5 million people receive treatment. Excuse me. Next slide. So that gives us kind of a basis to look at how huge the problem is. Now, out of that, we start looking at some of the history of the support groups. Again, like I said, some folks think that just started with Alcoholics Anonymous. Research that I did, it's interesting to find out that Native Americans as early as the 1730s were concerned about alcohol consumption. And there's some, though there's not any kind of documented proof of this, but there's some discussion or thought that people, when Native Americans do what is known as their vision quest, that could be some type of detoxing, and that it's a way for them to be away from others while they get the alcohol out of their system. We move on up to the 1840s. There was a group in Philadelphia known as the Washingtonians. And it was a small group of about 6 men who had the idea that they were going to go find drunkards. And they use that language of drunkards because the term alcoholic had not been used. Out of the Washingtonian group, there's some formed called the Oxford groups. And those had some of some of the things that will later show up in other recovery groups. They believed in having the person, in effect, tell their story to another person and try to work with people on an individual basis. They were pretty successful. As it turns out, Bill Wilson, who was one of the founders of Alcoholics Anonymous, actually was visited by a friend of his who was involved in the Oxford groups. So, in 1935, Alcoholics Anonymous began, and we will talk some more about that shortly. There's also some alternatives that started up maybe in the last 30 years or so that are alternatives to that Alcoholics Anonymous model. Recovery, in a way, is a very individual experience. It provides an opportunity for a person to become well acquainted with how their thoughts and actions affected not only their life but those around them. While this is an individual journey, the value of support groups cannot be overstated. One action early in recovery is deciding to sever the ties with people who are actively using or who make it easy for you to continue abusing your substance. This is pretty difficult to do. You know, this is your peer group. This is people who you have engaged in a behavior with that has seemed social, fun, engaging, and now taking a look at needing to stop using a substance. It's necessary for folks to sever ties with those people. It makes it very difficult. Having a good support group can do much to help you with that. The people who are attending any type of sobriety group are people that are actively working towards building a healthy life and learning how to use tools needed to maintain their sobriety. And the groups can provide a healthy peer pressure. You know, the more people engage with going to the groups, people are able to feel part of the group and are able to become a contributing member of that group. It provides a safe environment to practice new skills. One of the things that people talk about early in their sobriety is, I don't know how to do, what do you do at a party if you're not drinking? How do you go out to a dance if you don't like do a lot of cocaine or whatever before you do that? Being with a group, learning how to do those social settings, learning how that you can build on those kind of experiences gives you a really good safe environment to practice those skills. A lot of times dealing with recovery, relationships with friends and family have been impacted heavily. Being able to have a group of people who have been through the same things that you were going through in terms of learning how to stop using a substance, learning how to rebuild skills, learning how to be a positive influence. All of those are helped by attending groups and working with people that are also working on those things. When you connect with other people, it can help to reduce the feelings of isolation. So often people, once they do decide to do something about their addiction, can feel very lonely. They feel they're the only ones. There's an awful lot of fear involved. What am I going to be like when I'm sober? what if nobody talks to me? What if, you know, I'm going to be this lonely, glum person? And so having the groups can help to deal with those feelings of isolation and fear and hopelessness. It's also much easier to stay motivated and positive when you can turn to and lean to others who can help you go through what are your tough times. excuse me, I need to take a swallow of water. If you can hold on 2 seconds. Sorry. Thank you. Thank you. Next slide. Now, I do want to spend some time talking about some of the more well-known groups that are available. Of course, like I said at the beginning, Alcoholics Anonymous is probably the most widely known group, support group that there is. It was, again, started in 1935. The primary features of this, and again, some of this is some of the steps or some of the ideas that came forward from the Oxford group, is you have to admit that you have a problem with alcohol. That can be very difficult for people. You also need to acknowledge the role of a higher power. Now, in that discussion about some folks feel that puts too much of a spin on a religious idea to it, higher power they leave up to the individual person to decide what that term means to them. But there is an acknowledgement that there's a higher power and it's not you. They also rely a lot on sharing the experience that people have gone through in their meetings. They also have the idea of sponsorship, where someone that is involved in AA who has a lengthy time of sobriety can work with newcomers. There's some 2.1 million members in over 150 countries. They've developed recently a strong online presence with e-groups that are available. There are like chat room setups. There are individual meetings that people in all parts of the world, if they have a internet connection, don't have to be isolated and can be able to connect with other members of AA. Next slide. Another really big group is the Narcotics Anonymous. It began in 1953 in California. And there was much work that went on between Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous to make use of the 12 steps and traditions. And so there's a lot of sharing of literature between the two groups. Now, in the early 70s, they really exploded in terms of having the number of meetings. That they went from some 20 meetings nationally to more recently 1,100 meetings throughout the world. They also have a strong presence on the internet and have groups that people can join online. Next slide. Another group in the mid-80s started seeing some movement towards people not wanting to endorse the concept of spirituality or a higher power or religious-based recovery. There was an organization started called the Secular Organization for Recovery. They were one of the first groups that acknowledged addiction to any substances. Didn't matter drugs, alcohol, narcotics, illegal drugs, all of that. They focused on maintaining sobriety, and they worked very hard to separate the issue of sobriety from religion or spirituality. It's also an international group these days. They have a newsletter. They offer some online real-time chat rooms on the internet, as well as having groups that people can join throughout the world. Next, the next group is one called Smart Recovery, self-management and recovery training. This is a program that was started in the mid-90s. There's some 900 meetings around the world. Their focus, while it is an abstinence program, it's based on cognitive behavioral principles. They look at rational emotive behavior therapy. Their meetings are has somewhat of the same structure of like 12-step groups, in that there is a leader. People talk about what is going on for them. They have workbooks that people are able to work through to talk about their use, to look at some of the thoughts and feelings that led up to people using. They also have a very strong online presence. They have meetings and chat rooms along with some newsletters that are sent out. Next one. Another group is Moderation Management. That one was started in 1994. They believe in a need for a behavioral change. This is one of the first groups that we see they're not so focused on recommending abstinence as the only way to recover from problem drinking. This is one of the first groups that you see that actually teaches how to engage in moderate and responsible drinking, and it provides those techniques in a meeting setting. Don't know that they have as strong of an online presence as some of the others that we talked about. Another group that is really active, next slide, this is the Women for Sobriety. It started in 1976. There's some 200 meetings that are around the world. They are an abstinence model. They encourage people to maintain their sobriety, to not drink. Their groups that they have are for women only, although I did see some research that sometimes if males' partners are concerned about their female partners' use, they will sometimes contact Women for Sobriety to see if they can get some support that way. Their focus is on building your self-esteem. If women have a good sense of themselves, then they're able to make better choices. They don't necessarily use the term alcoholic to describe themselves. Next slide. There's one that's more recent development. It's called Life Ring. It was started in 1999, began out in California. It's very secular. Their activities are not based on any type of religion or spirituality of any kind. They encourage you to be abstinent from all substances. They support people in doing that. They have face-to-face meetings. Their website, and I have a number of websites that will be provided at the end of the presentation. They have a real strong presence online. They have a meeting directory online. They just had, I think, their national conference this past summer in Denver. And it's interesting to watch how it's moving across country. There's not any at this point in Minnesota where I'm talking from, but there are some groups in Denver. I believe there's one in St. Louis, and there's one up in the New York area. So it's interesting to watch how the groups have responded to the need. And I think it's interesting, like the Women in Sobriety started up in the mid-70s, can be seen as somewhat an offshoot of some of the feminism things that were going on. Next slide. The interesting thing about doing the research for this group or for this presentation is there clearly is something for everyone. The idea that there is only one way to get sober and one group that you need to align with is no longer adequate here. There are groups for Jewish alcoholics and chemically dependent persons. There's also a group for international AA for doctors that are in recovery. There are a number of groups that have come up to work with dual recovery issues. That would be people that are dealing not only with substance abuse concerns, but also have mental illness that is doubly impacting their ability to maintain their sobriety. The aviation pilots have a group that's called Birds of a Feather. I thought it was pretty cute. They don't have groups, but they have nests that people can go to. Social workers also have a group. It was started up in the 80s, and it facilitates some mutual support through meetings and workshops and newsletters. They also have monthly email that is sent out about that. The pharmacists also have a recovery network. There are lawyers that are involved. Again, it's practically any type of substance or any type of group that you feel an allegiance to, there you can find a group for you to get the support you need with that. Now, one of the things that I've noticed that with the advent of all these groups, there being different ways, different paths that people find to get their support, there's what I guess I would call it like a recovery advocates, that it's moving away, or it's looking at the idea of addiction as like a public health concern, and that you need to address it through providing services, you know, looking at a larger need for there to be policy changes, that sort of thing. Next slide. Again, this is a list of resources. There are websites there. There are ways to connect with the various groups. I found it interesting that the Life Ring people, their website is unhooked.com. Now, I also included information or the website information regarding the Rethinking Drinking program. That is one that the Department of Health and Human Services came up with probably 8 years ago or so. They have developed a program that helps people figure out, do they have an alcohol problem? They can send out information to people to do kind of some self-study, you know, looking at are people measuring. You know, some people say, well, I only had one drink last night. Of course, if there was 6 ounces of alcohol in that, that's not considered just one drink. And so it takes a kind of a gentle approach to helping somebody figure out if they need to talk with somebody and get some help for their use. Now, in my quest to not have any kind of coughing fit and such, I think I may have rushed through some of this information. I'm wondering if we can now do the survey, if that is all right, Amy. Maybe you can help with that.
To help us evaluate and improve our program, please complete the following short survey. If you are a Cigna employee, we ask that you please refrain from participating in this survey. After the last question, there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions. Your individual responses will be kept confidential. Please tell us the degree to which you agree or disagree with the following statements. Number one, this session provided me with information about the importance of participation in support groups. Star 1, strongly agree. Star 2, agree. Star 3, disagree. Star 4, strongly disagree. Once again, question 1, this session provided me with information about the importance of participation in support groups. Star 1, strongly agree. Star 2, agree. Star 3, disagree. Star 4, strongly agree. And we are waiting for some responses, please. Question 2. This session educated me about the many different types of support groups available. Star 1, strongly agree. Star 2, agree. Star 3, disagree. Star 4, strongly disagree. Question 3, overall, this session met my expectations. Please select one of the following responses. Star 1, strongly agree. Star 2, agree. Star 3, disagree. Star 4, strongly disagree. Question 4, I would recommend this program to others. Star 1 if you agree, star 2 if you do not agree. Question 5, our final question. Please select the response that best describes your role in the life of an individual with substance abuse issues. Star 1, I am the person with a substance abuse issue. Star 2, I am a family member of a person with a substance abuse issue. Star 3, I am a treatment provider for someone with a substance abuse issue. Star 4, other. Thank you for your feedback and for participating in our program. If you'd like to make any additional comments to help us improve this program, or if you have questions on today's topic, please press star 1 to have your line opened into the conference. We'll take our first question.
Hi, my name is Linda. I came in late, so I missed part of it. But I don't know how to log on to see the slides. But my main question is, I didn't hear anything mentioned about Al-Anon for the people affected by somebody else's drinking.
No, you didn't, Linda. This is Barbara. Yes, Al-Anon is a large part of support for people, for those whose lives have been affected by people who are using alcohol. Sorry for the oversight with that.
Okay, thank you.
And as a reminder, it is star one to signal for a question today. We'll take our next question. Caller, your line is open. Please go ahead. Caller, your line is open. And once again, it is star one to signal for questions today. It appears we have one additional question.
Yes.
Caller, go ahead, please.
Yes, I couldn't locate the website. Can you give me that site again?
Sure. This is Amy. The website, the web address is www.cigna.com/substance abuse. And substance abuse is all one word. And you can click on that presentation or any others that have been conducted.
All right. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
And as a reminder, it is star one to signal for questions today. We'll take our next question.
Hi, my name is Pat, and I had a question regarding you mentioning that this disease is starting to not be seen as more of a public nuisance, but more as a, did you mention that it would be a medical problem, or, I'm not sure I quite got that.
Okay. What I was meaning by that is that with the advent of people being in sobriety support groups, that there's also some movement towards viewing the total impact of addictions as a public health issue. So you see some advocacy done on behalf of making sure that people have access to treatment, making sure that there's parity between physical and mental health concerns. That's what I meant by that. Does that help?
Thank you. Yes, thank you.
Hmm? And we'll take the next question.
I had a question. I don't know if you can hear me.
Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Okay. I was curious, as, you know, I'm assuming a lot of people on the phone are Cigna employees. Are the groups like the moderation management or the ones that are more not necessarily abstinence-based, are those recommended to educate our customers about, or is that not approved by Cigna to, you know, kind of recommend more of the risk management groups?
The information that I got was from our website, from the support group website, and so I don't you know, it's not that they endorse or approve that sort of thing, but it's that these are available.
Okay. Thank you.
Mhm.
And as a reminder, it is star one to signal for questions today.
You know, a lot of times for folks, as they are beginning to think about whether or not they have a problem with, say, an alcohol addiction, sometimes doing those baby steps, if you will, the trying to do moderate drinking, may be a way to help people to make those decisions. Again, that Rethinking Drinking website has a whole ton of information regarding that very thing, about helping people to make the better decisions.
And there appear to be no additional signals at this time. Ms. Papa George, I'd like to turn the conference back over to you.
Thank you, and thank you so much for attending. Thank you, Barbara, for speaking today. If you have additional questions for our speaker, please contact her at the web address listed on the PowerPoint. If you have specific questions in regard to treatment or your policy, please contact the outpatient team by calling the number on the back of your insurance card. Our next seminar will be on April 16th. If you haven't already done so, feel free to listen to the replays of any of the past year's seminars, and be sure to sign up to receive automatic email reminders for the upcoming sessions. Thank you.
This concludes today's conference. Thank you for your participation.